Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Thursday as we explore Pet Health and Homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck, and Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, author and homeopath Christina Chambreau. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Well, I heard Debbie's phone ringing, so
just a moment.
Okay,
what happened was my phone rang, and it seemed to have interfered with my internet connection, and therefore it kind of put it on a funny situation, but it's all good. I hear you loud and clear.
I have the
chat open.
Yep.
I don't know how many people will come in to listen to us live today, but I know that we have many, many people who download the archives. I want to introduce today that I am Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our regular weekly co-host, Dr. Christina Chambreau, a doctor of veterinary medicine, who has been doing a series on pet health. Today is January 19th, 2012. And we ask you to get on live, comment, send us your questions, and we will deal with those over the air, see how we can answer your questions. And today, we're going to continue a third in a series on hospice care for pets. And I think we're specifically going to talk about homeopathic remedies. Of course, go back and listen to the archives. You can download them to your iPod, your computer, your listening device, and you can also share these shows with others, either by linking right directly on Twitter, on Facebook, on your website. You can embed each individual show. You can even write a blog about it. Let other people know that we have this wonderful resource with Dr. Christina Chambreau, and she is an adjunct faculty member of the Maryland Veterinary Technician Program, lectures widely across the country, does telephone consulting for your animals, and she is the founder of the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy and co-author of the Homeopathic Repertory, a tutorial. She does a lot more than that, I'm sure. And she is an inspiration to me. Each time we talk, every week, I learn something new and I am enlightened. My quote for today comes from Agnes Sly Turnbull, who says, quote, "Dogs' lives are too short. Their only fault, really." And we talked about that last week, that a dog or our pets do not live as long as we do, and therefore we have to be their caretakers. So I'm looking forward to continuing our discussion today.
And even more than that we have to be their caretakers because they live a shorter life than we do, it's that from the moment we take on an animal and decide to share our lives with animals, we know they're going to be dying. And so the best care we can give allows them to live the longest possible life. But still, sometimes that may be 2, 4, 6, 8, or 10 years, as opposed to the possible of 20 or 30 years. And so we need to learn from our animals to live in the moment, to enjoy every moment, and then to be able to love the joy that we've had with them once they've passed. They don't want us to be sad and miserable for months. They want us to continue to enjoy life, bring on other animals if we feel like it. They live in the moment, and it's one of the wonderful things we can learn from them. So particularly when we're dealing with a hospice situation, part of what's important is your own process. And so you may need homeopathic treatment, both for the acute things that may come up for you, but also it may trigger some of your deep-seated issues that can be healed with homeopathy, flower essences, Reiki, or other approaches to healing. So it's very important to think about you as a caretaker as well as thinking about what your animals need. And the steps and materials that are needed for successfully prescribing homeopathic remedies in hospice situations are really the same ones that are needed for prescribing for yourself or for other people whose animals are ill or have just transitioned back into the wonderful energy field, excitement of what's next, and or treating any person or animal or plant. So the first thing is you need to take the case, and we did several talks on this earlier, late in 2010, and that's really...
We're losing sound. We're losing sound. We're kind of going in and out. So just repeat your last sentence again.
Okay. So the first step in successful prescribing for hospice situations as well as for any other situation is to take the case.
Yeah, we're losing sound today. I wonder whether Christina has been having problems with her internet connection.
Nope, I'm not on the internet. I'm on just the regular phone.
You're on the regular phone. Okay, so
I'm on a landline. I'm on a landline.
Blog Talk Radio. Sometimes we have a little bit of trouble getting through, but you seem to be coming back in pretty clear again.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Great. Just whistle if I'm not. Interrupt me somehow.
I will give you that.
Great. So it's the steps in order to prescribe successfully for hospice situations are the same steps that you would to prescribe a homeopathic remedy for people or animals that are healthy and want to be more healthy, or people and animals that are ill with anything. So it's not different for hospice situations. There are some differences, as there are in anything, difference in acute prescribing versus chronic prescribing. So the first step that's most important in prescribing is case taking. And we talked about that at the end of 2010. So you can go back and listen to those and look at my notes on those. But the key thing with case taking is you want to discover what is it about this animal right now that's different than other animals with the same problem. So often a hospice situation that with homeopathy turns out to be a cure is cats with renal disease. So you may have the common symptoms for cats with renal disease is vomiting, lethargy, not wanting to eat, weight loss, a uremic odor to the breath, and sometimes it sort of seems like the whole body has sort of this uremic odor. Or cats or dogs with liver failure have a yellow skin, yellow eyes, have poor appetite, weight loss, swelling maybe in the abdominal area where the liver is. These are common symptoms, and the remedy chosen needs to cover those, but it's not going to help you find the best remedy for this particular animal. So when you're taking the case, you list all of the symptoms, but your radar screen, your binoculars, your telescope is looking for those symptoms that are different. So a cat with kidney failure with all the common symptoms, one cat may have become very chilly, very fearful, very restless, particularly after midnight. So those would be different symptoms than other cats with renal disease. You could have another cat with all the renal disease symptoms who actually wants cold air blowing on them, wants to go outdoors a lot or sit in the window, wants to cuddle a lot, wants to have a lot of affection and a lot of petting. You may have another cat that, with all the symptoms of renal disease, who suddenly becomes very sensitive to noises and startles to noises, thunderstorms, noises of something being dropped, even maybe a loud voice. They become not just extra thirsty, which is another common symptom of renal disease, but they only want cold water. They want to drink water from the tap. They would prefer ice water. So each of those would be a different homeopathic remedy. As I've been saying them, hopefully you've been thinking to yourself, well, what remedy could that be for those of you who are experienced with homeopathy? In the first case, a restless chili cat might make you think of Arsenicum album, although it could be many other remedies. A cat who prefers open air and is very affectionate and prefers cold could be Pulsatilla. A cat who's sensitive to loud noises could be Phosphorus. Again, each one of these could lead to different remedies according to other symptoms that showed up, but you can see how a cat who's in a hospice condition with renal failure, each cat would receive a different remedy because of the symptoms they're having in addition to the vomiting, thirst, increased urination, not eating, and weight loss. So that's a key thing of case taking. So part of case taking is understanding which symptoms are part of the disease or the illness so that you then know which symptoms are part of the individual animal. So if you had, for instance, a cat with fibrosarcoma, a common symptom is not to drink a lot of water, like in kidney disease. So with kidney disease, you would sort of not put very much emphasis or weight on the fact that the cat was drinking a lot, whereas a cat with fibrosarcoma who begins drinking a lot of water and has normal kidney values, you would make sure you have a remedy that has thirst, extreme thirst, as a major part of its symptomology. So you need to know and understand what disease you're dealing with. And sometimes that means talking with a veterinary technician, somebody who can really explain to you what's going on. And this is an important piece, not just for hospice care. Anytime you go to a veterinarian, you need to be sure to demand, ask nicely, but really demand. Make sure you get, not demand in a nasty way, but make sure that the veterinarian shows you what they mean. If a veterinarian says your cat has gingivitis and needs a dental, say, please show me what you mean, because that way you can track the symptoms yourself. Your cat has conjunctivitis. Your cat has stomatitis. Your dog has infected anal glands, even something like that that you think you would know, make sure you see what that veterinarian is saying. Even things like heart issues, you can ask, would I be able to listen with the stethoscope and hear that? And a good veterinarian will hook you up to the stethoscope and make sure that you hear what she's hearing. So that's part of understanding what are common symptoms and what are individual symptoms. So then the next step is when you're actually selecting the remedy, you want to be thinking, one of the things you have to think about is this a case where this animal is likely to respond well to a homeopathic remedy or not to respond well to a homeopathic remedy? So the way we know that is often how they've been responding to treatments in the past and how individual their symptoms are, how unique their symptoms are, and to the extent that the pathology has gone. So that may be from blood work, ultrasounds, EKGs, x-rays, that sort of thing. For instance, if you have a young kitten that has FIP, feline infectious peritonitis, and the abdomen is completely filled with fluid and the chest cavity is filled with fluid, and the cat hasn't eaten for 2 weeks, and the cat has lost over 50% of its body weight, there is always a possibility of curing with homeopathy, but that is an animal that's less likely to be curable than a cat with kidney disease who's drinking a lot, threw up twice, and has lost a little bit of weight, but still has a lot of individual characteristic symptoms. Make sense? So then...
Yes, I am here and I am listening.
Yep.
I'm also...
I know you are.
Okay, good. And you're going great guns. This is really excellent information for those. We've had a couple of people come in, listen for a few minutes, and then leave. Sometimes it's the noon hour and they've got to go to lunch or a meeting or whatever. But I'm sure they'll be back.
Downloading it.
Or they'll download the podcast, and we do have a guest in the chat room, probably came in either through Twitter or Facebook, or they got a message in their broadcast message to Homeopathy World Community. We welcome people to announce who they are and if they have any comments or questions while we're doing the live show now, and we will try to answer them. Okay, so right now you just finished explaining...
Kate's taking, and our next step is selecting the remedy.
Okay.
So if you think the animal is curable, then you're going to really be looking for, as we'll talk about in evaluation of response, you'll be looking for the indications that you're either palliating, suppressing, or curing, and your goal is to cure. If you really feel the animal is terminal at this point, then you want to focus more on the symptoms that are causing the problems, the discomfort, the lowering the quality of life. You always want to pay attention to the quality of life symptoms, but if you feel there's a chance for a cure, you may tolerate for a little bit longer slight discomfort, especially if it seems to be part of a homeopathic aggravation, which would then lead to a further cure. But if you feel they're closer or more likely to be terminal, then you're going to focus more on the specific symptoms, and you may even try alternating remedies. That's a time when somebody may try a combination remedy if the animal's not responding. You certainly want to be doing other supportive care like Reiki and flower essences. There are multiple ways of selecting there are multiple different approaches to treating many terminal or hospice type conditions. Cancer is a condition that would certainly be considered hospice in many animals. And some homeopaths treat cancer with single remedies, carefully monitoring and going for a cure. Others follow the Ramakrishna method of using several remedies. Others use different approaches, like maybe autonozodes. So there are many different approaches. My approach has been pretty much the single remedy. However, if I have an animal where I'm sort of stumped and haven't been able to completely improve the quality of life, and it looks like we're not going to be getting a cure, then I have occasionally done two remedies. I remember one dog about 10 years ago who had just a major, very, very old dog who was doing okay, except he was very, very lame. And he was super lame when he first got up from laying down. But he also, which is more of a Rustox symptom, and he also had later in the day, he would develop into a bryonia symptoms of the more he walked, the worse he was, the more he rested, the better he was. And I had tried many individual remedies trying to cure the dog, and at one point we sort of threw up our hands, and we started giving Rustox in the morning and bryonia in the evening. And the dog went on for another 5 or 6 months before his regular disease took over and killed him, and he walked fine, did absolutely wonderful. So there I believe in some flexibility, even though my main approach is single remedies. Because
right.
That,
mm-hmm. Even Hahnemann did that, as I recall in my readings, he would might do Nux Vomica in the morning and sulfur at night or something
mm-hmm.
like that. Those are complementary to each other.
Right. Well, yeah, definitely one of the keys in hospice care is knowing about the relationship of remedies. And the book I particularly like is by Rehman, R-E-H-M-E-N. It's called Remedy Relationships. In the back of Kent's repertory is a small chart with relationship of remedies, of what remedies, if you have a good response with a remedy, and then it sort of did many things but not everything, which would be the next remedy to go to, or which would be a remedy not to use next. But Rehman's book is many, many pages for each remedy, and he gives even some details as to, here's a remedy that follows if it's a heart problem. Here's a remedy that follows if it's a tubercular problem. So I like his book in terms of helping you decide the following remedies. And that is important because with hospice animals, you may have to repeat, you may have to change remedies more frequently. And the reason for that, it all makes sense. If you understand the basic philosophy and principles of homeopathy, which we started with at the beginning of this of the show series last fall, if you understand that, then it makes sense to you. A vital force, the energy pattern of the body that is weak, is unable to hold itself. So you give a remedy and it gets a little bit better, but the energy field isn't able to hold that pattern, so then it gets worse again. And then it shifts. It's not able to stay focused in one area. So then you get new symptoms. And so then you need to move into a different remedy. I believe it was Michelle Yassin, who's a veterinarian in New York State, who lectured for the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy on palliation. And there have been several people over the years who've done some good palliation talks. Jill Elliott may have done one. Talking about when we feel that what's left is mostly palliation, that we may treat a little differently. But still, the basic keynotes are there. Take the case and then try to match the remedy as closely as you can with the materia medica, which we'll get into in a minute. Then you need to figure out the right dose and frequency. I would say with hospice cases, you're most likely to use the LM potencies or the liquid shaking the jars and shaking before you give each dose of maybe a 30C. Finally, you need to be able to evaluate the response. Because, as we've said, homeopathically treating hospice cases often turns into a cured animal who then goes on to live for another 1 to 10 more years. So you've got to be patient. If, for instance, an animal's had liver disease for 3 years, you're not going to expect that to turn around in a week. You're going to expect that to take months to maybe a year or two, but you're going to see steady, slow improvement. Remembering that the key thing to look for a cure or moving towards a cure, which is what you're most likely to get in hospice, is they feel better. Their emotional state is better, their energy level is better, their appetite is better. Or more normal. So now we're going to move into a few of the homeopathic remedies that are often needed in hospice cases. One is aconite. There are often times during an animal's treatment, maybe it's because they're at the vet clinic and having a whole lot of things done and that scares them. Maybe it's because just they have moved into a phase of being super afraid. So the keynote of aconite is ever since terror or trauma, fear, fright, fevers. Sue Armstrong is an awesome homeopathic veterinarian in England, and she lists aconite as a remedy often needed during transition. Arnica, many animals develop pains. They slip, they fall, So often they need arnica, and it may be an intercurrent remedy. You may be moving towards a cure, and all of a sudden they have an injury, and maybe they're blind, and another animal bumps into them and knocks them over, and they show the key symptoms of arnica. Don't touch me. Or, I'm so restless in bed, and it's not the arsenicum restlessness, it's I hurt too much to settle down. And you'd know the difference because if you palpate the arsenicum album animal, they wouldn't be painful. If you palpate the arnica animal, they would be painful. Arsenicum album. Well, we definitely have to talk about ARSALB when we're talking about hospice because many people talk about ARSALB as being the euthanasia remedy. It is not the euthanasia remedy. What happens is many animals and many people, as they get close to death, develop a fearful state, a restless state, an anxious state. This is the arsenicum album state. Because it's so common, we often, when we give arsenicum album when an animal or person is near death, often they will relax and then die. So it looks like it's causing euthanasia, but it's not. So you only need to use the arsenicum album if the animal is showing symptoms of arsenicum album. Now, Gail Pope, who runs Brighthaven, which is an incredible sanctuary, go to brighthaven.org, she feels that we often need to treat the owner's fear of death. And in her sanctuary, she rarely uses arsenicum before death. Her animals move into different states and need different remedies, not arsenicum. So that's something to think about. On the other hand, Dr. Pitcairn used it in 90% of his dying patients. Now, that's maybe because he's dealing with owners who, as Gail said, may be needing the treatment. And so we're treating the animals with arsenicum, which is treating the owner. And so he had owners, and Gail had the animals in her hands. Belladonna can often be needed for fevers that may happen in a septic state, that like if a tumor is in the process of healing, it may open up and become septic. Belladonna is your typical characteristics, hot fever inflammation. Buridicarb is one of those remedies of old age that may often be needed. So the typical causes of the typical symptoms of buridicarb is what you'd be looking for. It is known for treating the very young and the very old, so it is often needed as a hospice remedy. Bryonia, which I mentioned earlier, again, often animals as they're aging develop joint issues, and Bryonia, and the key of Bryonia is they don't want to be touched, they don't want to be jarred, but it's different than the arnica. So you have to learn to sense those differences. Or you try one, that doesn't work, you go to the other one that is similar enough that you think, oh, that's it. Now, arnica doesn't have the thirst of Bryonia. Bryonia is thirsty for very large amounts of water at one time. Carcinosin in treating our cancer cases may often be needed, but it's also, carcinosin is a remedy that is frequently needed in animals in general, and often in geriatric patients. So it's one that's well worth learning. Causticum, weakness, involuntary urination, nerve problems. It's a major remedy for old age problems in general, specifically of the sphincters. Gelsimium can be used. Different in the notes, I list different veterinarians are using each of these remedies for transition times. So I've never used gelsimium, or not that I can think of, in a hospice situation, but Dr. Gardner feels it helps transition.
Gelsimium is really wonderful for anxiety, anticipation, going to the dentist, different kinds of things, fearfulness, influenzas. Mm-hmm. So gelsimium does fit in with that kind of restlessness, and I think it would be helpful. I don't know about actually experiences using it. I know for myself, I've used it for influenza to success.
Well, there's the key of Jill Simium is dull, droopy, drowsy, down. So it's that you need to have that piece, I think, of it there, which it certainly can. You can see in animals that are getting near death, they just sort of collapse. Although phosphoric acid may be a little more useful at that point, which I didn't list here. So I specifically want to bring up phosphoric acid when we get to the peas. Hypericum, again, painful things, and a lot of animals will go through, may go into a hypericum state who are getting repeated subcutaneous fluids being given to them. They'll be fine for a long time, for months and months, getting their fluids, or years, and all of a sudden they don't want the needle put in. That would be a time to think of hypericum. Ignatia, grief, ailments from grief, maybe they're more needed for the people afterwards. Ignatia and gelsimium and some of the other behavior remedies can be needed for the senile animals that are vocalizing a lot. So phosphoric acid is an important one that I didn't list, and it's important because of it's almost as if you're dead. You're so wiped out. You're not there. You're not present, and it's often needed when you're totally exhausted from grief. But I've seen it in a dog that in one way might be considered hospice, young dogs with parvo that, you know, easily could die, and they're wiped out. They're completely flat out. You almost think they're dead, and phosphoric acid will turn them around. So phosphoric acid's another one to think of. I have found frequently a lot of my animals, just before they die and need to help in transitioning, that pulsatilla is needed because they seem to get to a point they don't want you out of their sight. They're whimpering, wanting to be held. And so I find pulsatilla a little more than Arsenicum album is needed. But again, you look for the match.
Would you imagine that pulsatilla pet is typically in that state during its lifetime or needs it?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
It's really important. What we pay most attention to is transition, is changes. How did they change at this point? Yeah, I have not found that to be true. I found the remedies near death don't seem, in my experience, they haven't been related to what they needed beforehand.
That's a very interesting point. You're not going to be using their, let's say, constitutional remedy.
Right. Now, that's if they need specific treatment. A lot of my animals are getting their constitutional remedy all the time. And so I don't think about it as a remedy for death. I just think about it as their remedy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so you may very well be right that they often need their constitutional remedy. I'm just not thinking about it as a death remedy because they haven't changed into needing something different.
So cueing into those changes and noticing them during the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Or even days or hours.
Mm-hmm. So you as the companion to your pet are with them, caring for them, observing any minute changes so you know what would assist them through that transition.
Exactly. And it may be that you don't know how to select the remedy, but you're contacting somebody who is an experienced homeopath, and you've got the symptoms to be able to tell them that will have them do a better job in selecting the remedy. And that's why it's also important, what we're going to talk about next week are the early warning signs of illness, the symptoms that we consider normal that really indicate that the energy field, the vital force is out of whack. And healthy animals, they don't have these symptoms. So things like a smelly dog or eye discharge. I was just talking to someone with a cat with recurrent bladder problems, and she said as the cat recovers from the bladder problems, which he does with no antibiotics. He just recovers on his own with extra water being given to him. That in the few days after his bladder problem, his eyes run profusely, and then they dry up.
Is this a
good
sign?
So it's part of his discharging and clearing.
Right. So it's a good sign to see that, and we shouldn't suppress it, knowing that that's another way that the toxins or whatever it is getting eliminated from the body.
Exactly. But we don't want to have it be there. So if we're treating an animal and they seem to be responding well, and then they start developing eye discharge or a little crud in the corner of their eyes, and at the same time they start to lick the concrete, we're looking at the early warning signs of illness and going, oh, we're moving in the wrong direction. So being able to do this exam is important in hospice cases as well as with our animals at any stage. So that's what we'll be talking about next week. Did any questions show up? I was sort of going by my notes.
We do. We have Lisa or Lissy, who is a homeopath, and she also does Bach flower remedies.
Bach flowers are wonderful.
And she works with birds and is hoping to provide service to local animal rescues. She loves animals, and she has a question. What about a bird that has a cold and is sneezing? I know this may not be toward hospice care, but in general, I think birds do have respiratory problems. And what do we do in this type of a situation?
Right. Well, birds can die very quickly. So you need to really be able to evaluate birds. I am not a bird specialist. It's something we may want to do is occasionally have somebody come in to talk about different species.
We would love that.
So a bird that has a cold and is sneezing, you would treat, number one, you have to know the basic bird stuff. So are they eating? Are they being fed the right food? Are they getting the right water? But let's assume you already know all the good bird stuff and you want to know how to treat it homeopathically. Everything I just said would apply. You have to take the case of the bird with a cold who is sneezing and find out, how is this bird with a cold different than another bird with the cold? What is it sneezing? How often is it sneezing? What comes out when it sneezes? Is there any discharge when it's not sneezing? Are the eyes running? Are the feathers drooping? Is it being more affectionate or less affectionate? Is it eating more, eating less, drinking more, drinking less, wanting cold water, wanting warm water? And then you take all of those symptoms and you match up which homeopathic remedy fits the closest. And Shirley Casey has done incredible work with wild animals and homeopathy. So I would super suggest getting some of her books or going to some of her classes if she's still teaching or getting notes.
Where is she?
She's based in Colorado.
Colorado. And what is her name? Shirley?
Shirley Casey.
Casey.
Okay. Well, we'll try to track down a link for her that we can put on.
Okay. So also we want to know.
And the other thing, of course, with a bird, you know, and since you're doing Bach flowers, you would probably do crabapple as well as rescue remedy. But you too would be taking the case and looking at which emotional states this bird is in, what maybe triggered it, and then you'd be prescribing the Bach flowers that would match that.
Right. She has a good resource with the Bach flower remedies. And we also would want to look at whether this bird has a tendency toward getting a cold or whether this is unusual for that particular bird, whether it was, you know, in an environment of a cold wind, so the season or the environment could play a part. For instance, if a kid goes out and plays and gets chilled, we do think of aconite as the first line of defense.
Yes. Yep, absolutely. And it would be exactly the same thing for a bird. That would be one of the things that you would think about. Now, I'm putting in Shirley Casey's website is ewildagain.org.
Okay, great.
So I just added that to the comments.
Great. I'm glad you're in the chat there. You're multitasking really well.
I'm trying. So thanks, Lisa, for doing your work, and let the rescues know that you're available. Just contact each one of them. With the flower essences, you shouldn't have any trouble helping out with that, with the Bach flowers.
Okay.
And
so now,
hopefully you'll join us for our other classes.
Right. I think that she's been on and off. Lisa, you can mention whether you've been listening to the pet shows. I know that I feel as if you've been here before. Also,
great.
So you were interjecting that phosphoric acid was also similar to Ignatia in terms of a grief remedy, and to look at that for complete exhaustion. And then you were going to, I think you had a couple more remedies to describe symptoms,
those are in the handout. They aren't used as often.
Okay. So do you have any other?
Nope. I think we're pretty well wrapped up for today, and I've set us up for next week.
Okay. So next week we will be talking about early warning signs.
Doing a physical exam to be able to get extra clues to help you prescribe.
Okay. And I do want to ask folks again to share this information with other people who are interested in caring for their pets holistically. We are so fortunate to have Dr. Christina Chambrow as our guest on the line each week. And Christina, you might want to mention your website again so that people can reach you directly, as well as on Homeopathy World Community. There is a picture of Christina where you can click it, and you can find out all of the podcasts and the notes for these shows on Thursday, which is today. Usually at 12 o'clock, we have Alan Phillips on vaccinations and your rights in the United States, talking about exemptions and waivers. Today we've had some scheduling conflicts, so I don't think he's going to be on. And on Monday evening, we've had Grant Bentley talking about facial analysis and this method of case taking and how it helps to narrow down the choices for your remedy selections. On Wednesday morning, Dr. Adil Kasim of India, a cardiologist, talks about heart health, stress, diabetes, diet, and we've had some incredible discussions. Christina, it amazes me that a cardiologist is so open to Reiki and other forms of holistic care. On the last show, he talked about exercise and the seven different types of exercise that we can do, including manual exercise of massage, and how powerful that is to help the individual improve their health condition.
Well, if they're thinking about stress, they should go to an incredible resource for discovering the hidden causes of your stress. And that is Doc, D-O-C, Orman, O-R-M-A-N. And there's a large amount of free information there.
Right.
And,
so that's, that's your hubby.
That is my hubby.
Yes. So
and there's incredible.
you must be quite a team.
how to sleep. One of his newest books that's available there is Sleep Well Again.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I'm mailing it to a friend today who hasn't been sleeping well.
Well, there are a lot of things we can do to improve our sleep. I wonder, maybe we should have a show on pets and sleep. That might be quite interesting.
Hmm.
You know, whether people have their pets sleep in the bed with them or in another room or put them into the cage or things like that, I would be interesting, I think, of a show like that.
Could be. I just think it's all of the above.
Oh, it could be any of those, huh?
It is. Oh. You know, it depends on the pet and it depends on the person.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I want to thank you again for being on the show and encourage folks to comment. Contact us if you have any questions so we can answer your questions on the air. And maybe give us some ideas for shows. And share in every way possible, either embed the show onto your website, tweet it, Facebook it, put it on your email, and share it that way. And we're going to end today looking forward to next Thursday at 1 o'clock with Dr. Christina Chambreau.
Thank you again so much, Debbie, for organizing this. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Pet Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Brock and Dr. Christina Chambreau. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when show airs, share with friends on Facebook and Twitter, and send in your comments and questions. See you next time!